Your home for sports on the radio. We are 95.3 The Score.
I hope you're ready. It's that time.
Let's do it!
Climb aboard, all aboard, for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
I got a bad feeling about this.
I can't take it anymore.
I am losing my mind.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
I know that, dude.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
Alex is sitting there saying, what the heck are they talking about?
I would have Mariota out at 3 in the morning drunk, pawning his Heisman Trophy to get into an illegal poker house.
And now, a guy with lots of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
No, I mean, like, lots of issues.
Shut up and get on with the program. Dude is a snot.
And broadcasting them, searching for answer.
Who is this?
It's Steve Tannen.
Have another donut, you fat pig.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody?
Julie, hey, guess what day it is?
Oh, come on, I know you can hear me. Mike, what day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoop!
Welcome, 5 o'clock hour on a Wednesday is upon us. I guess the Blazers are getting back to work tonight, working their way through this just monster part of their schedule, taking on Houston, who's 29-17. That is the back end of the ESPN doubleheader. I assume Calabro and Hurd will have the call on Channel 737 airline Comcast. Or what is it, NBC Sports Northwest? I always forget. When Fentress left, I had no reason to care anymore.
NBC Sports Northwest.
All
yes.
Right. I rallied. I trooped. So, what we got going here? Dusty Baker's the new manager of the Astros, trying to be the first manager ever to take five teams to the postseason. He already stands with, well, G. Davey Johnson and Billy Martin as the only to take four, unless somebody could find a fifth. We thought we had Dick Williams, but it turned out, after the strike ended in 1981, he was canned as manager of the Expos and did, in fact, not lead the team into the postseason, losing to the Dodgers in the National League Championship Series when 20-game winner regular starter Steve Rogers was brought in late in the game. And the first player ever drafted in the MLB draft in 1965, who also saved the American flag from burning, Rick Monday hit a shot over the center field fence at Dodger Stadium. That was a long way to go to describe that one. Dismissing a very, very good Montreal team who never made it back. I mean, there were multiple Hall of Famers on that Montreal team. Now, if I could only think of who they were. Oh, the kid, Gary Carter, the Hawk, Andre Dawson on that team as well. Rogers, not a Hall of Famer, but a hell of a pitcher. Like I said, a 20-game winner. I think before he moved on to Minnesota and became a really elite closer, I think Jeff Reardon was their back end of the bullpen guy. Oh, Tim Raines, the Crow, Warren Cromartie. You know who's a reserve on that team? Terry Francona. Somebody who is texting me is wrong. It was before Dennis Martinez, so this was 1981. Woody Fryman, the veteran. Stan Bonson. Elias Sosa, who gave up the second of Reggie Jackson's three homers in Game 6 of the 77 series on that team as well. Good team. Went 60-48. Won the East. Beat the Phillies. I shouldn't say they won the East. They That was like the first year that they had to expand the playoffs because they really were out of options because they went on strike for 56 days. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. And Dennis Martinez wasn't a Hall of Famer anyway. El Presidente, I think he was on the Orioles back then. Yeah, in 81, he pitched the early part of his career with the Orioles. He was actually a part of the Oriole team that won the World Series in 1983. Dennis Martinez is not a Hall of Famer. All right, El Presidente! 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. By the way, our friends at the Oregon Lottery with their fun app, where you could now, the Oregon Lottery scoreboard app. My goodness, Sunday, you can absolutely make wagers all over the place. You know, get in on the action. As they used to say, bet with your head, not over it. You could have the traditionals, the spread, the over-under, the money line. And my goodness gracious, the prop bets. You know, I like that onsides kick. I know a lot of people default to safety. Scoring plays, either half, turnovers, MVP odds, heads or tails, just on and on and on. And remember to download the Oregon Lottery scoreboard app today, because when you play scoreboard, you're supporting the things Oregonians care about. That's a win for everybody, and we've been having an awful lot of fun playing, and we appreciate their support. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, working our way through Wednesday, talking about Dusty Baker. I was, as you would expect, a decent person to acknowledge the passing of a great, great player, Chris Dolman, defensive end extraordinaire with the Minnesota Vikings. He had a quick cup of coffee, 2 years with the Falcons, three with San Francisco, and then he played, I think he was one more year back in Minnie, but this is a guy who retired with 150 sacks, and when he retired, only LT had more sacks in a single season than the 21 he recorded in 1989. So he with the Falcons in 94-95, you know, they weren't great teams, but he was on that 98 San Francisco team where Steve Young hit T.O. on the last play to beat Favre and the Packers. And he was on some good Minnesota teams, and I don't have to tell you Vikings fans that it always ended in frustration, misery, and aggravation. And he actually played 1 year, the last year, 1985, his rookie year, that Bud Grant of the famous Purple People Eaters, coached Minnesota. You know, I kind of forgot, and sometimes you forget because he acts pretty young. Pete Carroll was a defensive back coach on those mid-'80s Vikings teams, along with Monty Kiffin. They were one of the first teams to barely play 500 ball. It was the strike season of 87 where they had scab players for two games. They got in with an 8-7 record, knocked off the Saints, beat the Niners that year, and then almost beat Washington, lost 17-10. An 8-7 team back then almost made the Super Bowl. Then they became more of the Vikings in 88. They lost to that San Francisco juggernaut that would Montana to Taylor. Then they lost to the Niners again, the Niners team who would repeat and beat Denver 55-10. And he was a fantastic player. But I shouldn't say but. He made the Hall of Fame. I want to use the proper terminology, maybe unsung. I don't think you can't be underrated and they induct you into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, probably.
I would say you could kind of slip under the radar, maybe not have your greatness understood by the entirety of the NFL fan base. But within the game, I mean, he's been on like the all 90s teams and stuff like that.
But isn't sliding under the radar underrated? Like, quite literally?
Or is it unsung?
I feel like they're two different. You're saying tomato, tomato.
I don't think so.
Okay. We Montreal Mike called in as well. You were talking about Rick Monday and his game-winning homer. That was a home run on the road at Stade Olympique in Montreal. I have confirmed it with the Baseball Reference box score as well.
Really?
Yes, that was a road game where he hit the home run in the top of the ninth. Montreal Mike.
Was that he was watching it there, Olympic Stadium?
Stade Olympique. Yes, it was.
Let me tell you something. The mind is a dangerous thing. I have a vision of it going over the wall in L.A.
That is wrong. You're probably thinking of another Rick Monday home.
Nope, I was thinking of that one. And go back to what you just said. I was wrong. Hey, memories get mixed up, especially when you're going back 39 years. And I could tell you this. Here's the pitch, fly ball center field. It's gone, and I guarantee you a rather sizable F-bomb emanated from me at those times. I used to root my ass off against the Dodgers all the time, forever, because there was
good job, by the way.
There was a rivalry. I mean, from Brooklyn to New York through my dad. Then they played the Yankees in 77 and 78, so screw them and Tommy Lasorda.
I'm watching a replay of the video now. I'll give you this. When they cut to center field, and it's about, I'm going to show you where I paused it. It's a home run to like deep right.
It was a blue fence.
It's a blue fence with a dark black background for the batter's eye. You probably could get fooled that was at Dodger Stadium.
Until you realize it's an artificial surface.
Right, but then you have to like look at it and analyze or whatever. So I can understand you getting it mixed up. And
what do I always say, though?
You should know better.
No, if you're wrong, admit it. Oh. Don't double down on your idiocy.
I'm just saying, you can double down here and explain the mistake.
Well, I did say earlier, if we had to go to the tape, that I did say I see it going over the blue wall. I did say that. But no, I was wrong. That's all. Next. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Man, did you hear that they had to stop selling some Kobe gear sneakers because jerks were buying it to try and resell it? I mean, I'm all for capitalism, but that there's a part of that that's just kind of gross. You know, to coin a phrase, be better. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. But to go back to Dolman, one of the problems he ran into was he was playing really great with two of the greatest defensive ends ever, literally joined the league at the same time as he did. In Bruce Smith, who was the number one draft in 85, top pick overall to Bafalai when he went 4 to Minnesota. And then a guy joined the league in 85 who had spent his first year as a pro out of Tennessee with the Memphis Showboats of the USFL. He then, when the league folded, joined the Eagles. You may know him better as the Minister of Defense, Reggie White. Another peer of his was Howie Long. So it's like Hall of Fame, Hall of Fame, Hall of Fame, much bigger high-profile guys. But there was little Dolman getting his, you know, he averaged 10 sacks a season. He had a 21-sack season, which at the time, like I said, only LT had cranked out a bigger one. And he was, even though he played for the Vikings, there were a lot of Philly people that, when I lived there, used to talk about him. He went to high school just outside Philly in Valley Forge. He played at Pitt. And we were talking earlier, that draft had Bruce Smith, Jerry Rice, Kevin Green, another Hall of Famer, And, by the way, has totally nothing to do with anything but one of my all-time favorite receivers, who the Jets picked, Al Toon. Remember when the Ducks played Wisconsin in the first Rose Bowl? Their top receiver was Nick Toon. The Big Al also played at Wisconsin. So, overshadowed, but a four-time All-Pro. And, like I said, if you're a defensive end back then, people, believe me, are going to say, oh, yeah, that's Reggie White and Bruce Smith. There. That's it. Howie Long, like I said. But he was a wrecking crew. What a great, great player. Passed away just 58 years old. Battled 2 years. Brain cancer. Underwent a surgical procedure. And, yeah, really sad. Sucks. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Some of you chimed in with one of the most simple tweets that I retweeted with comment. I shouldn't say top players because it is subjective. Just, you know, your five NBA players you saw in person that you're like, yeah, this is really cool. Our buddy Josh called, you know, had season's tickets. First of all, talk about just taking care of things. Well, if I saw one game, I saw the Dream Team in Portland, and there's like, well, there's five okay players between Malone and Stockton and Clyde the Glide. And, oh, I haven't even gotten to Michael Magic and Bird. Pippen also on that team. The big fella, Pat Ewing. And, of course, you got to see Christian Leitner. All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Actually, my list, I purposely went old guy. It's not about the greatest or doing a comparison, but it's like when I look back and think about, thanks, Dad. I got to see Bill Russell, Wilt Chamberlain, Kareem. By the way, Kareem as a rookie through 75. I saw him... Kareem joined the Bucks after leading UCLA to a third consecutive national title. Remember, freshmen didn't play, so he became Kareem. Kill, murder, crush, everything and everyone. I think they lost three games in 3 years, won the Natty, joined the Bucks, took a team that was just a laughingstock and took them to the finals of the East before they ran into that great Knick team who was on their way to their first title. And then... you know, I think he got traded to L.A. in 75. So I saw Kareem a million times. I saw Wilt a bunch of times. And Pete Maravich, Jerry West. Seeing Maravich play, I'll tell you, for a young guy who thought he had, just because I could dribble around the back, I assume I'd be the next Pete Maravich. You know, at the Garden then in the 80s, got to see Mike Magic. And who's that other guy? Bird. Boo. Isaiah Thomas. Neek. Saw Dominique. Maybe the best dunk I ever saw in person was Dominique off a missed foul shot, I think by Kevin Willis. And he came side hoop, two-hand catch, dunk. And it's like, did somebody drop him out of the rafters? I mean, the Garden crowd went berserk. Plus, they were playing a garbage Knick team. Anyway, 284-8571. Got some really good contributions there. I like who's one of the guys on Twitter. Said he saw one NBA game in person. I've got to get to this. Top five NBA players I've seen in person. Benoit Benjamin, Darnell Valentine, Michael Cage, Reggie Theus, and Joe Klein. And his explanation is, I saw one NBA game, 1986, Clippers-Kings. That's like the anti-bucket list.
The one Warriors game that I went to at Oracle was Thunder at Warriors, December 18th. Russell Westbrook went for 33 with 8 assists. Kevin Durant had 30 points, only had 2 rebounds and 2 assists. He did that in 18 minutes as well. I think he absolutely went off in the first half, and then I think he got like hurt or something, and like he just didn't come back in the second half and play. And then Stephen Curry had 34, 7 rebounds and 9 assists in that one. So I watched in the first half, Kevin Durant went off, and then in the second half was the Russell Westbrook and Steph Curry show. It was insane.
That sounds like that was, you said 18 minutes?
Yes. 30 points on 10 of 13 shooting. He was 5 of 6 from 3. He did it in 18 minutes and 44 seconds. He didn't play the second half.
That's ridiculous.
Yes, it was.
That's video game insanity. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. We usually do the tweet of the day. I might have the stupid tweet of the week.
Ooh, fun.
So,
are you going to read my Twitter now?
No.
Oh.
There's a UFC women's fight coming up. I didn't even know this was a thing because I don't follow UFC. A straw weight. And the participants, I've got to get this right. I actually read the names, never heard of either of them. They're part of UFC 248 in Vegas, March 7th. So you know it's a big deal because those things always sell out and they always kill on pay-per-view. And so there is Zhang Weili is the Chinese fighter who's the champ. The challenger is someone named Joanna Jungjacek. And she actually posted something that mocked the coronavirus. She took it down pretty quickly, but as you well know, screenshot, it's forever. And so Weili responds back, yeah, you make fun of tragedy. That's a sign of character. People are dying. Someone's father, someone's mother, someone's child. Say what you want about me. It makes you feel stronger, but don't joke about what's happening here. I wish you good health until March 7th. I will see you soon. You know, when you mouth off and chirp in basketball or baseball, it's one thing. You remember when, well, we'll get to that. I know we've got a caller on the line. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Chris. Chris, good afternoon. How's it going?
Good, Steve. Thank you.
What's up?
I'm calling about the 5 best players I've seen.
Okay.
I got to see LeBron down in Miami his first year, and they were actually playing the Cavs, which was kind of unique. But him and both Dwayne Wade, definitely the best two that night. Actually, I thought Dwayne Wade was a little bit better because LeBron wasn't shooting so well at the free throw line. the other one definitely was Kobe, and he was up at the Moda Center that night, and at that time he scored the most points in the Moda Center.
Oh, really?
49 points. Yeah, he scored 49 that night, which was the night before he tore his Achilles. And Lillard went off to that game and scored like 37 or 38. And then another time I saw a Blazers game with Chris Paul playing for the Hornets. And so I would say Chris Paul, Lillard, Bryant, Wade, James.
Wow. That's not bad. That's a lot of good checklists there, Chris.
Yeah, it was definitely a good time down there in Miami as well, and you know, seeing Kobe dominate the way he did, man, it was something to watch.
All right, good contribution. I appreciate it. I would say one of the worst cases of getting into a war of words in a boxing match and then getting punished for it was 1966 when Ali was fighting a guy by the name of Ernie Terrell. And for a better part of a year and a half, he had changed his name from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali. And Terrell would not call him that. He insisted on calling him Cassius Clay. And if you Google Terrell Ali, say my name, Ali, the consensus was he could have won the fight in the third. He didn't. He carried him and would be like, boom, what's my name? Boom, say my name. Boom, say my name. So Yeah, that was the ultimate in taunting. He just landed a combo on him that what happened was then there's one scene, like it's a movie, where the bell sounds. Ali doesn't go to his corner. He's hanging around Terrell and just went up to him after he kicked his ass for a whole round. What's my name? He carried him 7 more rounds. All right. Ali, the number is he'd thrown more punches than he'd ever thrown in a fight. 737. So, amazing. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Barry. Barry, good afternoon. How's it going?
Oh, it's going great, Steve. Hey, you and I were about the same age, and obviously you got to go to a bunch of sporting events at the Garden. My grandfather and my dad have season tickets to the Lakers, and so all these names that have been mentioned, I've seen all of them. But I'll tell you, my fondest memories for basketball was going to the Harlem Globetrotters in the like early and mid 70s.
Really?
That was a big deal.
Yeah, we saw the Globies at the Garden. There was also kind of a secondary team that was local but would get some ex-Globetrotters. They were called the Harlem Magicians.
Uh-huh.
But
that was
crazy. Yeah, so you would actually rate like Meadowlark Lemon and Curly Neal and those Marcus Haynes up there with Chamberlain, Weston, Taylor.
I wouldn't say they're good, of course, but man, it sure was entertaining going to those and being a little kid in, you know, in the early 70s. It was really fun going to those. And I mean, I've seen Jerry West play and Chamberlain and Kobe and everybody in between. And those were pretty memorable events going to Globetrotters with my grandparents.
No, that's a good one. That's a very unique contribution. Thanks a lot, Barry. Have a good night. All right, that brings us to break time. We'll come back. We'll have a little update ski and move along with more sports talk. 95.3 The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk, your home for the Coors Light scoreboard and the refreshing tweet of the day. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
I had one team tell me, we have gotten fewer calls and made fewer calls than at any time in recent years around trade deadline. This is a team that's typically pretty active, and I've had that echoed around the league with a lot of executives. Typically, it starts to pick up as we get later into this week. Super Bowl Sunday, it's always kind of quiet, and then everybody regroups on Monday, and things start to take off.
Oh, do they? That's, I don't know if I want to call it a Woj bomb. But he's talking about the NBA trade deadline right now is kind of like, shh, we no speak. But so the trade deadline is a week from tomorrow, noon our time. I guess it's worth keeping an eye if you're a Blazer fan. Are they going to keep Whiteside or what's to become of us? All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. I was listening to Joey on Duck Insider. Or was it a pregame show? Well, Jerry was with him. They were talking about the possibility that Peyton Pritchard is in the running for National Player of the Year, Pac-12 Player of the Year. I'd say right now it's he, Isaiah Stewart. Tinkle's having a big year, but the team is, the Beavers are one of the most disappointing teams in this conference, I thought, because with the experience they're bringing back, I thought they'd be in the running, and they're like already at the point where it's win the conference championship, win the conference tournament, or bye-bye. But I also went and looked at previous conference players of the year, and I think you can draw a parallel. I can only speak for this league because that's the only research I did, but a connection between being the Pac-12 player of the year and the success of your NBA career, like being a Heisman Trophy winner and the success of your NBA, well, probably NFL career. How many Well, I guess there was one Heisman Trophy winner who did have a good NBA career, Charlie Ward, in 93. So while what I said was accidental and I'm an idiot, on a technicality, I was right once. So I went back 20 years. Josh Childress, Stanford. He had kind of an interesting career. He played with the Hawks, which means he obviously lost a bet, was primarily a bench guy, left, played 2 years in Greece, then came back, played a couple years with Hooked on Phonics, then he was a bench guy. Arizona State, remember Ike Diago? Of course you do if you've been around here. Well, this is 19 years ago, so it's outside your purview. It hasn't happened today, or to the Falcons, or to the Giants, or to the Ducks, or in soccer. I thought he'd be a better pro, but he also had a problem in that he was 6'8", and he was not quick enough to play the three and as a power forward. And he ended up being a lottery pick to the to Golden State back when they did nothing right. He got traded to the Pacers, and I was looking it up. Larry Bird said, we got Ike Diagu is the gem in this deal. Yeah, he bounced around the D-League a little bit in the pros, left for overseas. By the way, he's still playing in China. Player of the year, Brandon Roy. We know the story there, was on his way to being a great. Deteriorating knees, done. Aaron Aflalo, very good NBA career, not great. Started, reserve, peaked with the Magic about 6 years ago, actually averaged 18 a game. Last played in 2018 for Orlando after some stints with the Knicks, Blazers, and Kings. Kevin Love, terrific NBA player. James Harden, he's okay. One of the best players on the planet. And I'll tell you what, I had to go back and click Google Images. I forgot about this guy. And he only played like 11 years ago. Jorge Gutierrez out of Cal went undrafted, bounced around between, well, then I guess we called it the D-League, and out. Alan Crabb, who was the last pick of the first round in 2013. Actually, I guess Gutierrez was only 9 years ago. He ended up with Portland, if you remember. Couple years with Brooklyn. And, by the way, 2 weeks ago, traded from Atlanta to Minnesota. He's still in the league. Good for you. Nick Johnson of Arizona. Looked like he might be a good pro. Played about 45 minutes with Houston. Been out of the NBA since his rookie year. Then you had, remember who the player of the year was the next year? Joe Young, Oregon, who cursed himself. If you remember, his final speech as a Duck referred to Duck Nation, putting the kibosh on any potential NBA success. He was a deep bench guy for the Pacers for 3 years. And by the way, he bolted overseas, still playing for the Nanjing Monkey King of the Chinese Basketball Association. Pardon? I did not make that up.
How do you spell that? I'd like to buy 19 sweatshirts.
Nanjing Monkey King of the, it's referred to as the CBA. An older NBA fan is like, is the Continental Basketball Association still around? Did you look them up? Do they have cool unis?
I found their logo. Their logo is incredibly badass. It looks like a very angry gorilla that's like also has its face painted like they're part of like the old WWE days or something flying
really?
Through the air. It doesn't look not badass, that's for sure.
Is it equal in badassedness to the angry monkey in Chris's closet on Family Guy?
Oh, much more badass.
Who gives a very accusing point.
No, that's just kind of, that's an okay monkey compared to this.
Okay. Then you had Jakob Poeltl of Utah, 9th overall pick in his draft to Tirana. Played 2 years there, got traded to San Antonio for DeMar DeRozan. He's their size off the pine, plays every game. That guy is actually one of the best per minute rebounders in the association. 2017 Pac-12 Player of the Year. Dylan Brooks. By the way, middle of the second round to Houston, who dealt him to Memphis, this dude is doing great. He became a starter his rookie year, got hurt last year. Now he's not only a starter, Brooks is averaging 16 points a game. He has a chance to be the best NBA Duck. For a career, Terrell Brandon, he was an all-star, but he averaged 14 points a game. Greg Ballard averaged 12. Of course, oh, I shouldn't say of course, he won an NBA championship with the Washington Bullets back in 78. You had back then Steve Snapper Jones, who averaged about 15 points a game. In the old ABA, he only played 1 year in the NBA with Portland. For the older fans, Jim Barnett. I'll tell you what, keep an eye on Troy Brown. Down the stretch last year for Washington, he started to get a lot of playing time. Now he's a part-time starter, full-time player. He's averaging about 11 points a game. But oddly enough, no Duck has averaged more points per game than Terrell Brandon. There's never been a Duck who, over the course of their career, had more than a 14-point-per-game average. Brandon peaked with Cleveland in 95 or 96, where he averaged 19.5 points a game. Hey, he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. They called him the NBA's best point guard. Then he ran into knee problems and had to retire. Then, of course, you had DeAndre Ayton, who's back from suspension for Hooked on Phonics. And last year's honoree, Jalen Noel of the Huskies, played parts of 7 games for the T-Wolves this year. But the thing to remember, like Troy Brown, he was a one-and-done guy. He's young. He's only 20. And you know, there's obviously a lot of room for growth and improvement. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. I'll maybe save it for tomorrow. Go through the Player of the Year candidates, of which many feel Peyton Pritchard is among the top dozen or so. And hey, bottom line is they're in it. Highly ranked. They've got some big national showcase games coming up. And if they wind up the Pac-12 champs and a high seed, he's going to be a real high-profile guy, and that'll only aid his cause. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's take a break. We'll be back. We'll have the tweet of the day and wrap up a Wednesday next. 95.3, The Score.
And now, it's the Coors Light refreshing tweet of the day.
They are trending, twittering, tweeting, you name it.
On Sports Talk with Steve Tannen.
LOL, laugh out loud, OMG, oh my God, WTF, why the face?
Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, Doc Nick.
Hey, thanks for being ready for the show, Steve.
Why should I start now?
I turned on the microphones and Steve goes, oh, right, and then picks up his headset and then gets ready for the segment. Nick Rogers here at the Coors Light Frostburn Sports Desk for the Coors Light Refreshing Tweet of the Day. Coors Light Mountain Cold Refreshment that is made to chill. We've answered a question from the internet. Bob Nightingale, at B Nightingale, put out that the Astros, if they make the playoffs, Dusty Baker will become the first manager in history to take 5 teams to the postseason. Of course, bringing up who else has done it? How many other people have taken 4? I searched through 100 different managers on Baseball Reference's page, opening it up into a new tab, looking at their record, if they got to the postseason, what did they do? That's 100 of them.
Good work, by the way. Take pride in that.
I found 2. Davey Johnson and Billy Martin. And when I brought them up to Steve, he was able to immediately right off the bat name all of the teams.
Billy Martin's easy. He was a Yankee. Come on.
Right.
It's a wheelhouse.
So, anyways. So, thanks for nothing, Bob Nightingale. You kind of ruined my afternoon, but thank you.
Our day was ruined.
There's a very good tweet from NHL Seattle. At NHL Seattle underscore. They are supposed to be releasing their new team name very soon. It got leaked that they're going to be the Seattle Kraken. They're trying to stick with some sort of Pacific Northwest theme.
Kraken?
The Kraken.
Do you get pipes?
It's very different, and that's at least something that you can give them credit for. Not a lot of people liked it, because I think a lot of people thought they were going to be the Sockeyes, even though everybody's like, well, all of the other animals in the Pacific Division also eat Sockeyes. That doesn't make a lot of sense. It's a weird animal logic thing. But at NHL Seattle _ tweets, while we're aware of some fishy rumors surrounding our team name, please rest assured we're doing our due diligence, by scouting the depths of the ocean, the tallest mountains, and the densest parts of the forest to find the right name for our great green city. Just putting it out there, confirming every rumor that we've possibly heard about what the name might be, that yes, they've considered it at this point. And the conspiracy theories now are only going to grow. They're only going to get worse from here. But our tweet of the day is from at Cespedes Barbecue, Cespedes BBQ on Twitter. Another amazing thing about
Baseball player?
Cespedes Barbecue? No, it's not Ioannis Cespedes' account. It's a long story. But they tweet, another amazing Dusty thing is that he's credited for being a part of the first high five, which is incredible. And they quote his Wikipedia page. Many believe that Baker played an integral part of being in the first ever high five, which occurred between Baker and Dodgers teammate Glenn Burke on October 2nd, 1977. There was a 30 for 30 documentary called The High Five about it. And Baker says his hand was up in the air and he was arching way back. So I reached up and hit his hand. It seemed like the right thing to do.
Nice.
How incredible is that? Dusty Baker, the only guy to manage while wearing sweatbands and with a toothpick in his mouth, also was a part of the first high five. Half of the first ever high five. I can't imagine.
What was the guy's name? Glenn Burke?
Yes, that was what I said. Thank you for listening.
I'm sorry. I was responding to something.
But yeah, I can't imagine living in a world where a high five wasn't a thing. Like you grew up and you didn't know what happened until all of a sudden it was just like, oh, yeah, these two guys playing baseball. They did this thing. They stuck their hands kind of high in the air, all five fingers, and they just put them together. It was like this weird.
No more gimme five.
Yeah, there's no
that
more.
Was what it was.
I can't imagine living in that world.
What happened? I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish whatever you had to do.
Oh, sorry. Thanks to at Cespedes Barbecue for the refreshing tweet of the day. Follow the station on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. You'll be able to see Cooper, our pet of the week from Greenhill Humane Society. He's adorable. Please adopt him. He needs love. That's at 953thescore, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. I'm on Twitter at Rick Nodgers. Steve is on Twitter at SportsTalk953. He missed his shot.
Sure, don't be a jerk. The worst.
Don't do it. Just do it.
Real quick before we move along, our sweet deal of the week. It's a busy week. It's restaurant week. And for tomorrow, it's the Centennial Steakhouse. And of course, you know how it works. Go to 953thescore.com, click on the sweet deals link, save half price. For $25, you get a $50 certificate. And again, detail, sweet deal link, 953thescore.com. So what I wanted to say. Oh, George Carlin does a routine. If you take suburban kids and mix them in with the inner city kids, the mannerisms, the slang, the stuff like you were talking about, the latest celebrations, you will all of a sudden have these suburban kids acting like they're from the hood. And that used to happen. So when we went to basketball camp for the first time in the summer of 73, so we were 13 turning 14, and half the kids were the ones who could, you know, pay the $155 a week, whatever it was, to go to Willis Reed's kid. And then there were, you know, the scholarship kids. And that was the first year where instead of just shaking hands like this, you did the thumb to thumb. Kind of like that. And we came back, and all of a sudden in the Wayne Boys Club, before the center jump, you have all these white kids doing the thumb to thumb, shake hands before the game. And then in addition to it, and you would see it, you could always tell the latest handshake by the NBA center jump. And then in 73, we're there and we see Willis and Kareem do the, not the fist bump, fist on top of fist, like that. And we're like, that's the new one. Sure enough, when we went to camp that year, that's what everybody was doing before the center jump. You know, the way the, and of course, I don't have to tell you, once high-fiving started, then that morphed into the Bash Brothers, you know, the high elbow. And then one of the most creative ones I ever saw was Bo Jackson on Kansas City. They would do the fake high-five, whip it around, and pat each other on the back. And then there was the whip around, but you had to have some kind of coordination where you'd miss high five and then low five on the slap, the windmill high five. Yeah, that was always kind of a great tradition in the 70s. And then, you know, how old is the fist bump right now? That first there was fist to fist, then there was side fist, which Jeter used to do after a big play with his teammates. All right, we may have time for one more quick call. If somebody could put the pedal to the metal, let's get to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline and bring in Fred. Fred, good afternoon. How's it going?
I won't wait till it comes around, but when did the wave start?
Oh, gross. Yeah, that was either in Seattle or San Francisco in 80 or 81.
I dumped my first beer at my first game at the wave. I don't like that thing.
Nobody does.
Gotta go.
Have a good one.
The wave
celebration, I think they credit it to the Pep Club of the Huskies, but the Oakland fans insist it was Crazy George.
Because it's Crazy George at a San Jose State football game, I believe.
All right, well, the Rob Weller of Washington, later Entertainment Tonight, said in September of 84, they tried two waves. We used to do the anti-wave in Section 11 at Autzen Stadium, and the looks on some people. So, yeah, you stand, here come the waves. And we would not only sit, but we'd kind of duck down real low. And we're in the upper deck at Yankee Stadium some years ago in the 90s, and some drunk guy was like, one, two, three, and we would sit. We would stand when we heard him count. And he came over, like, two sections, like, what are you guys doing? Like, man, we're Yankee fans. We don't do the wave.
I'm much more inclined to do the wave if it doesn't start in my section. If you're the guy standing there at the bottom of the stairwell yelling, we're going to do the wave, we got this, come on, I'm not doing it. If I see it happening and it started on the other side of the arena,
right,
or even just a section over, I'll participate.
But you're not starting.
Oh, no. Can't be a start.
Wasn't it the year before last where in a blowout, Jerry pointed out, Tannen's not going to be happy, they're doing the wave.
Yeah.
So, enough said. Hey, have yourselves a wonderful evening. We'll catch up Thursday edition Sports Talk tomorrow, 95.3 The Score.